Hello, everyone. I'd like to call to order the May 3rd Planning and Zoning Commission meeting to session or to order. Ms. Ancona, will you please give us a roll call?
Commissioner Bergsma?
Here.
Vice Chair Harrington?
Here.
Commissioner Nichols?
Present by Zoom.
Commissioner Posey?
I'm here.
Commissioner Sturman?
Here.
And Chair Gamble?
Here.
Let the record show we have a quorum.
Thank you. I'd like to welcome you all out tonight. It's always so nice to see friendly faces and smiles again. For those of you whose first meeting is tonight, I wanted to let you know that the bathroom is out the doors and to the right. There's also a water fountain out there if you need to use that. So feel free. And if you guys now will all stand with me as we say the Pledge of Allegiance. All right. Thank you all. I will now open our call to the audience. I've got five blue cards. And at this time, any member of the public is allowed to address the commission on an issue that is not listed on today's agenda. So pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, individual commission members may ask town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. However, the commission may not discuss or take legal action on matters raised during call to the audience. In order to speak during call to the audience, please specify what you wish to discuss when you're completing a blue card. And since we've got five, I'm going to call Tim Terrace up first. I'll just get them in the order that I received them. And if you can state your name and whether or not you are an Oro Valley resident for the record, I would appreciate that. And everyone is entitled to 3 minutes of time.
Chairwoman, is that right? Gamble? Vice Chair, Commission, thank you. My name is Tim Terrace. I am an Oro Valley resident. I live directly across the street to the west from the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene. I am here to oppose the request to rezone their R-144 property to a planned area development. Zoning has a long history going back to the 1920s. By definition, one of the principal purposes of zoning is to protect property owners from the harmful effects that may arise when incompatible land uses exist within the same neighborhood. Our zoning codes were developed for the purpose of promoting and protecting the public health, safety, peace, comfort, convenience, and general welfare of the citizens of the town of Oro Valley. This entire project is for the benefit of the church and not the neighborhood. Considering the fact that 100% of the adjoining property owners have gone on record against it, speaks loud and clear. This proposal ignores decades of neighborhood investment in their homes and their community. This juggernaut of indifference offers nothing to the residents of the community. They have also stated future plans that far exceed the current proposal. Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene acquired the property knowing it was zoned residential. The neighborhood for miles around is residential. The best possible solution is to leave it residential. Please do not allow permanent and catastrophic damage to come to this Oro Valley legacy neighborhood. And I think it's appropriate at this time to quote the Hippocratic Oath that physicians live by, do no harm. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can I have Timothy Fagan? And then up next we'll have Doug Dalby.
My name's Tim Fagan. I am an Oro Valley resident. I lived up Calle Buena Vista north of the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene. I would like to address the proposed rezoning, which was scheduled to be heard by the town council this week and canceled for undisclosed reasons. My wife and I bought our home in 1990. We built our home in 1991. We were attracted to the area by the rural character, the zoning for farms as ranches. I had horses for over 20 years here. The maximum of one house per 3.3 acres, the views of the Catalina Mountains, and very limited traffic. That traffic has increased significantly since construction and expansion of the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene. One of the things they state is that they have an agreement with Canyon del Oro High School to have a pedestrian and vehicle bridge across Carmack Wash, and we have no information that agreement exists. And surely, if they're going to do that, they need an engineered plan for the bridge and permission from Oro Valley Planning and Zoning. This area is still primarily rural. The roads are used by cars and trucks, but they're used by bikers, people walking their dogs, riding horses, and driving horses and buggies. Calle Concordia has bike lanes and sidewalks, but Calle Buena Vista only has 6 feet of loose dirt and gravel on each side of the road. Thus, increases in traffic impact Calle Buena Vista more than Calle Concordia. There was a traffic study done by a local company, but to my reading, it has severe limitations and inadequacies. Much of it's incomprehensible even to an educated person. I do no harm because I'm a physician, or try not to. For example, they quote the Florida Department of Transportation LOSC and LOSDE repeatedly without explaining what the heck those are. Calculations were done regarding Calle Concordia based on the speed limit being 25 miles an hour, but anybody that's around there knows it's a rare vehicle that doesn't exceed the speed limit on Calle Concordia. The waiting times are estimated to be a few seconds, but we have at least two neighborhood residents who have on more than one occasion documented waits of more than 5 minutes in order to turn off of Calle Buena Vista. Okay. So we think that this whole plan has significant deleterious effects, and residents of the neighborhood feel that it should not be approved. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your comments. Doug Dalby? Then after that, I've got Anthony Ferreira.
Good evening. I am a resident of Oro Valley. My wife and I live at 9380 North Calle Buena Vista. We've lived there for 42 years. We have two daughters who attended a parochial school, K-8, and graduated from CDO in the U of A. We incurred the extra expense, time, and effort to send our daughters to a Christian school. We're members of a neighborhood church and understand the value of outreach and evangelism. However, we are totally opposed to the proposed rezoning and planned area development for the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene. There are multiple excellent reasons to oppose the rezoning, which include traffic, flooding, lighting, noise, water, and heat islands. We oppose this proposed rezoning for all those good reasons, but our main opposition is the rezoning would violate the trust that has been placed on the council and planning and zoning to maintain and preserve the character, quality, and integrity of this unique neighborhood. Once that quality is gone, it's gone forever. Can't be restored. Amphi School District had the foresight to buy the property where CDO is in 1962 for educational purposes, which did not create the conflicts that this proposal has created and will continue to create. If only the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene had had the foresight to purchase a location where they could achieve their dreams, where they wouldn't be encroaching on the quiet neighborhood. This proposal, which involves the construction of a 75,000-square-foot commercial building along a two-lane residential street, is not in keeping with the proposal of a planned area development, which in Section 24.4 of Oro Valley's rezoning regulations states that a pad's purpose is to, quote, improve and protect the public health, safety, and welfare, close quote. This rezoning has nothing positive to offer the residents of the neighborhood, as evidenced by 100% opposition to this project. Further review of Section 24.4 states, among other considerations, a PAD should, and these are quotes, encourage patterns of land use which decrease auto travel, increase public access to mass transit, reduce energy consumption and demand, minimize adverse environmental impacts, foster a rational pattern and relationship between land uses for the mutual benefit of the community, protect existing neighborhoods from harmful encroachment by intrusive or disruptive development. Close quotes. A 75,000 square foot commercial building and associated buildings, if that doesn't satisfy the council's definition of intrusive and disruptive encroachment in an R144 neighborhood, then I and the other voters would like to know what does. There are multiple other concerns that support the rejection of this rezoning request, but I urge you to look at the basics. Rezoning from R144 zoning and the long-term consequences of violating the trust that has been given to you to maintain the uniqueness and high quality of this Oro Valley neighborhood for the perceived benefit of just one more sports park added to the multiple facilities already in the area is not the right thing to do. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Anthony Ferreira, and then I've got Raymond Bryant or Lance.
Thank you. My name is Anthony Ferreira. I am a resident of Oro Valley. I'll be quick. My neighbors have stated many of the reasons why we oppose this project, the rezone of the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene. I just wanted to point out specifically, I neighbor their property directly, and they're proposing 75-foot high lights, which is essentially as high as the Disneyland castle directly in my backyard, which is, again, I think totally out of line with the character of the neighborhood. This project would do permanent and irreparable harm to the neighborhood, so I oppose it. Thank you.
Thank you. Raymond Bryant?
excuse me. I'm not talking about this particular project they're talking about, but the one that's going in at Monterey at Vistoso. And I approve of it. I just wanted to thank those that were involved in moving the unit number 18 back.
Chair, I think this needs to be at the item because this is not a call to the audience item. Sorry, sir.
Okay.
I don't know that your card was clear. It just says, didn't say whether you were called to the audience or this item.
I'm sorry. So we will be discussing that at this meeting. So would you like me to hang on to this and we can hear your comments at that time?
Sure. All it is just a thank you.
Okay. All right.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, everybody, for participating and filling out blue cards. We always welcome the opportunity to hear what everyone has to say. So thank you very much for taking the time and sharing. I would now like to close our call to the audience and start with our regular session agenda. Ms. Ancona, will you please read out our first agenda item?
Review and approval of the April 5th, 2022 regular session meeting minutes.
Could I get a motion on that? Commissioner Bergsma?
Yes, Chair Gamble. I move to approve the April 5th, 2022 meeting minutes.
Second?
I'll second.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
All right. Ms. Ancona, will you please read out our second agenda item?
Discussion and possible action regarding a proposed 18-unit residential subdivision located on the east corner of Rancho Vistoso Boulevard and Morning Vista Drive intersection, case number 2102029, item A, proposed conceptual site plan and conceptual landscape plan, and item B, proposed conceptual model home architecture.
All right, thank you. I will now turn the time over to Mr. Kyle Packer, our staff presenter.
Good evening, Commission. Again, my name is Kyle Packer, and I'm a planner with the Town of Oro Valley, as well as the planning lead reviewer on this project. for a proposed 18-unit subdivision on the east corner of Morning Vista Drive and Rancho Vistoso Boulevard. Go ahead and start with the focus tonight, which is going to be on the design as the use that is proposed is permitted. Again, item A tonight is a conceptual design package, which includes the site plan and conceptual landscape plan. This will be up for a commission recommendation and a town council decision. And then item B will be for the conceptual model home architecture, which has a commission decision. These require separate motions. To give some context of this site, it is a 3.5-acre parcel surrounded to the north, east, and south by Monterey Homes at Rancho Vistoso Boulevard and by Stone Canyon to the northeast across Rancho Vistoso Boulevard. The existing zoning here is Rancho Vistoso PAD HDR, or High Density Residential. It's had this zoning since the Rancho Vistoso PAD was adopted in 1987, and again, attached and detached units are a permitted use here. The table on the left shows the allowed height and setbacks, and on the right is what the applicant is proposing. So you'll notice that they're proposing about half of the heights that are allowed within this zoning. The first item is the conceptual site design, and looking to the applicant's design, I'd like to remind the commission again that attached and detached products are allowed here, and that the project meets all code requirements and has achieved two noteworthy accomplishments in collaboration with staff and adjacent neighbors. And these are the building orientation on Lot 18, which has moved the home away from adjacent neighbors at their request, and the preserving of natural features, particularly in regard to the large open area at the north here, Common Area C. This slide is a close-up of that area. The blue and green areas here are being preserved as natural open space, and combined with the active recreation area, this pool area here on the left, exceed the open space requirements for the project. Now, the yellow area is part of an existing 25% slope that the applicant is encroaching into through a staff-approved process permitted by the Rancho Vistoso PAD. While the yellow area will be built upon, the applicant has offered the blue area as a trade for encroaching into the yellow. The result is that all of the blue area, otherwise developable land, will be preserved as natural open space that further enhances the preserved 25% slope area in green and buffers neighbors to the northeast of the project. Looking to the conceptual landscape design within item A, all of these requirements for code have been met. Looking to the buffer yards, that means that the buffer yards meet the requirements along all of the roadways, including Rancho Vistoso Boulevard and Morning Vista Drive. And the project also exceeds the buffer yard requirements along the adjacent residential developments, as there are no required buffer yards between these two HDR areas. However, again, I'd like to highlight that the applicant has provided enhanced screening along the pool area to the north with that box there, as well as similarly near the common wall of Lot 18. Looking to the conceptual model home architecture, the proposed architecture uses similar colors as homes found in the surrounding area and uses a contemporary design style that incorporates stone veneer, stucco, and colors traditionally used in and around Oro Valley. These materials and colors are varied across all three models of this design, shown at the top of the slide. When it comes to scale, mass, and facades, these buildings are proposed at half the allowed heights, and the applicant provides four-sided architecture by varying roof lines and articulating building facades on all duplex units through the use of stone, covered entries, and patios. On detached units, the common wall is screened with trees to ensure visual interest across the home, and windows are also present on these walls to break up the wall plane while maintaining privacy. In summary, staff finds the applicant's proposal meets the PAD, zoning code, design principles, and applicable design standards, and staff recommends approval of item A for consideration by town council, as well as approval of item B for action by the Planning and Zoning Commission. Again, separate motions are required for these two items. I believe the applicant is here tonight with a presentation as well.
All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Packer. I will now turn the time over to Ms. Carrie Sylvan, the applicant presenter.
Good evening. Carrie Sylvan with Lazarus and Sylvan, representing Michael Sarabia, who's here tonight with DSW, the local developer. He's going to come introduce himself in just a minute. I want to introduce a couple of the other consultants who are here so that if you ask me a question that is too difficult for me to answer related to architecture or engineering, we have the experts here. Jim McMahon, who's the architect, is with us. Jason Morse from Grenier Engineering. And then Robin Large, who's a senior land planner who's worked on this project from the very beginning with our office, is also here. Staff has done a great job. What I'm going to do is you have a good sense of what's going on here. There's two approvals. They've already told you what it is that we need approval of and a recommendation or a requesting, I should say, approval of and a recommendation to approve. I'm going to have Michael come up and introduce himself and then just highlight a couple of things, particular to some of the changes in the work we did with the neighborhoods on the project.
Thank you. My name is Michael Sarabia. I'm a local developer, born and raised here in Tucson. And, you know, I'd like to thank staff. They've done a really good job on this entire project, helping us, you know, work with the neighbors and helping us work with staff themselves. We've owned land here in Oro Valley for about 18 years now, and I develop all through Tucson. Went to Saguaro High School on the east side, and my brother lives here in Oro Valley, as do my in-laws. But we've been fortunate. We've done some stuff in Oro Valley, and we've really, really enjoyed working here over the last, you know, 18 to 20 years. And this project, when we first saw it, was conceptually a big project with that was zoned for 34 feet, you know, buildings and so forth. And when I look at Oro Valley, I said, that doesn't really work for Oro Valley. We need to bring these down to single story. We need to make it less dense. We don't need to put 35 doors, two-story, 34 feet high on this property. And so with a great design team, we came up with something that we thought really fit well. And we worked with the neighbors to kind of tweak it and massage it to you know, kind of massage their concerns. And I think at this juncture, we've got a product that works for everybody. And I think it's a market product that will do great in Oro Valley. And that's it. Thank you very much.
I just want to echo our thank you to staff on this project, as well as two of our neighbors in particular, Lance Bryant, who you met at the call to the audience, and Justin Sanchez, who I believe is on the phone, as well as John Beamish, who's with the Monterey Homes HOA. It's really been a pleasure working with all of them to resolve issues, even at points in time when we thought we couldn't resolve some issues. That's when staff was able to step in. So we really appreciate all of the work on the project. You know where it's located. I believe you visited the site. So I'm going to skip this map. You still know where the site is. It's just meant to hone in on it. I do want to point out there's the topography kind of up in the area that you're seeing that we've designated for some protection. It's zoned HDR. Normally when I'm before you all, I'm requesting a rezoning and asking for permission to go higher, bigger, more dense. That's not what we're here for tonight. In fact, as Michael indicated, this is actually significantly less dense and less height than what was proposed. And I think even going to the first neighborhood meeting, it was received very well because people had seen some of the prior requests to actually maximize for multifamily. The maximum density ends up being about 59 homes on the 3.5 acres based on the density, 59 multifamily units. So it was received very well. We had some issues we had to work through. We worked them through. Staff went through, this is the site plan that we actually showed at the second neighborhood meeting, so we had not fixed lot 18 yet. So the idea here was to show a little bit of a succession, but as you know, these are 18 lots, 5.14 racks, so significantly less than the 18 to 17 residences per acre that are permitted. These are all two-bedroom. on about 3,800 to 3,900 square foot lots. They will all have two car garages in them as well. A third of the property is that 25% slope conservation area. That was a piece that we worked really hard with staff, and you saw their color-coded map, which if you have any questions about that, I would suggest we go back to that map to answer them, because we did have a lot of discussions about how to be code compliant and still be able to design the site so that we could keep a lot 18 but rejigger it essentially so that we could accommodate Mr. Bryant and Mr. Sanchez. Passive and active recreation areas in that 25% area. Access will be on Morning Vista Drive. We have been working with the Monterey Homes HOA. That is a private drive. So we're working with them on a maintenance. We're going to be offsetting their maintenance costs proportionally, and that'll be handled when we put together the CCNRs at the next stages. But again, that's Mr. Beamish, who's been great to work with. Setbacks and landscaping all meet code. I won't run through that. Really quickly on the public outreach, we had our first neighborhood meeting. And overall, as I said before, there was support for this approach. There were some concerns that we needed to address. So the privacy of Lot 18, which you've seen the fix and has made both of those homeowners very happy, and their wives, which as they've told me means that they're very happy. The protected hillside, there were some questions about making sure that we had that 25% slope conservation area covered. Grading, just understanding the grading approach, making sure that people understood the outdoor lighting code and that we are complying with it. Traffic volume and access, we talked about Morning Vista, and then the traffic volume, significantly less traffic with 18 units than there would be with the other densities that's permitted on the site. And then making sure we were complying with the drainage. So this was the significant, we then had the second neighborhood meeting, and really the only issue that was remaining was the Lot 18 and trying to figure out how to still meet code when it came to that 25% conservation area, but also do what we could to turn that building and pull it a little further away from the two existing lots. And I really do want to thank particularly Kyle Packer and Mr. Laws for really taking a close look at it after the neighborhood meeting, getting on the phone with us, trying to see what we could come up with proposals, and then Lance and Justin being amenable to some of these changes as we move forward. So they're very happy with that. The other thing that happened after the second neighborhood meeting was we were contacted by Monterey Homes HOA to start working on the Morning Vista and the Master HOA contacted, the Master Rancho Vistoso HOA contacted us. I think it might have been between the two meetings and then a discussion afterwards. And the other lawyer who's going to be doing the CCNRs for this development, because it will have its own HOA and CCNRs as required by law, it will indicate that it's also subject to the Master HOA, and we'll be working with the Master HOA on those issues as well. Staff has already pretty much run through the conceptual architecture. We have the warm color palette, the neutral, and the cool color palette. You can see this is the difference in the colors on just these two screens. So I'm not sure what you're seeing, but there are three different color palettes. I actually think staff's visual might be better. This is the warm, and this is the cool. You can see the architectural elements that staff highlighted, the integrally colored synthetic stucco, stone veneer. There's also insulated metal garage doors with lights, L-I-T-E-S, which is the windows on the top. And then standing seam metal roof. And again, that tallest point is under 16 feet. So that's the highest point of the homes. You can see in the backyards, all the utilities will be screened. They need to by code. And we have the same materials coming around the back. So it really is four-sided architecture. And you can just see some of the other elevations in a 3D format. With that, we're excited about the project. And we're, again, really happy to have gotten to yes with the HOA as well as the most adjacent neighbors. The conceptual site plans meet code, and the architecture meets code, so we're respectfully requesting your recommendation to approve the conceptual site plan and conceptual landscape plan and your approval of the architecture. And now I'm able to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Sylvan. I think what we're going to do, since we do have the one comment, I'll open the public hearing. And Lance, you said what you said. We've heard it. So I don't think we had any other blue cards, but so I will close the the call to the audience. There we go. Okay. So, commission member. Oh.
Just a moment. I was made aware that some folks may be trying to reach via Zoom. I'm not sure if IT has the capacity to double check that. I think they might not be here. So, okay.
The policy on Zoom, just so everybody knows, Madam Chair, is that they have to contact the clerk 24 hours in advance so that we can be on notice that we'll have Zoom callers. So if they didn't do that, then they wouldn't be available to speak this evening.
Okay. If I can, Chair and members of the commission. So there were two folks who I sent those instructions to, and they told me they were going to because they were going to be out of town. But if they didn't, I was authorized. Mr. Beamish had written, and I think staff has it, that the HOA is very much in support after all the changes we've made. And same thing with Justin Sanchez, who wanted to express his support. So I apologize. They may not have registered ahead of time, but they authorized me to make those comments.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Sylvan. Thank you, Mr. Bryant, for your comments. It's always really great when we get to hear how, you know, applicants and homeowners can come together and find a solution that works for everybody. It makes our job easier, huh? So at that, I will open up to the commissioners if there are any questions, comments. Commissioner Bergsma?
So in terms of parking for this development, each lot has, I believe, four spaces. Is that correct? And then also there is no on-street parking allowed other than the three community spaces down near the swimming pool, one of which is handicapped. Is that correct?
Chair Gamble, Commissioner Bergsma, that is correct. So each of the units has a two-car garage. The garage is a little over 20 feet in length. And then all of the units 1 through 13 have the I think it's 20 feet in front of the garage door as well. And then when we were trying to work through the 25% slope conservation area and then the shift of lot 18, we had to play around with, that's probably not the right word, we had to reposition lots 14 through 17. So the areas in front of the garages are not quite as long, and that's when we were required to put in the code required additional visitor parking, which is in there, and those are the required length. There will not be any parking permitted on the street by the CCNRs that will be adopted, nor obviously on the sidewalks or anything like that, and it'll be enforced through the CCNRs.
So lots 14 through 17, how deep are the spaces in front of the garage doors there?
They're about 10 feet.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner or Vice Chair Harrington.
I've also got a question about the lots 14 through 17. Is it plausible or possible that you can make the parking spots or the area for the in front of the garages wider since you can't make them longer? It is possible that the homeowners in the future is plausible they may have guests that it's too many for that area. Is it plausible if they have to park sideways Is it plausible to make it wider instead of longer?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Chair and Commissioner Harrington, we need to make sure that we can still meet code for landscaping because there is a certain amount of code requirements. Our sense is with this type of a development and the smaller number of lots, even with those four lots, that we shouldn't be having a parking issue. We could certainly, between the Planning Commission and Mayor and Council, if you desired, kind of take a look at that with staff and see if we could widen them a little bit and still meet all the code. Our biggest concern is we need to make sure that we are code compliant as we move it forward. But we've been able to do a few of those dances with staff. So,
thank you for that. I have an additional question. It's the rear of near lot 11. The foliage or trees or bushes or coverage, is this going to be mature trees or bushes that's going to be put behind there between the home? Because that's the pool area. I want to make sure that there's something going to be there blocking, not something fresh or new trees.
Madam Chair and Vice Chair, right, Harrington, it'll, by the end of this, I'll have this down. I actually don't remember what the code requires as far as landscaping and the size of landscaping, but we will be complying with code, and obviously code is intended to be, it may be slightly less mature when they're planted, but the idea is that it grows quickly and is able to take root and grow appropriately. So we were planning on meeting code in that area.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so any others? Okay, so I also shared the parking concern with lots 14 through 17, and I know staff knew about this ahead of time because several of us had the same concern, and we had staff draft up a condition. So I will ask for a motion, and then I would like that condition added on. So Mr. Staith, sure, will Chair. You please read that condition out?
Sure, Chair Gamble. So the draft condition is driveways for lots 14 through 17 are to be widened, and or the distance to the rear property line shall be reduced to the minimum setback to better accommodate a standard vehicle.
Okay. So if everybody heard that correctly, everybody understand what I was asking? Okay. All right, so.
And Ms. Sylvan, I'm sorry, Chair Gamble, we had checked with the applicant as well, and they were comfortable with that also.
Okay, great. Okay, then can I have a motion, or does anybody else have an opinion or discussion? Commissioner Bergsma.
So I brought up this concern when I was visiting the site yesterday, and I had the concern before I went out there too. Just so you have an understanding of the background here, and I think this may have been passed on to Ms. Sylvan already, but I'll make it clear for everybody else. So there is a section of town code that prohibits parking on a sidewalk. That section is 1144 subsection 7. Basically, it says you can't park on a sidewalk with some very limited exceptions. There's also a state statute, which was passed in the last session, the behest of a state representative from Phoenix who is a paraplegic. And she has a lot of experience going down sidewalks where she's blocked by people parking across the sidewalk. And so I think the concern is that with these short driveways, 10-foot driveways, which are really only going to be able to accommodate maybe a smart car, a two-seater, you're just going to create that situation. And so what happens? Well, somebody complains to the HOA, and they say, well, you can't park there. And they say, well, where am I going to park? I can't park on the street. There's only a couple of spaces down the street where I can park. It's a problem. So we've got to fix this. And the proposed condition of approval may do that. I'm not sure. It's a conundrum. So I'm willing to go with the condition of approval, I guess, on the site plan. Although I'd rather be a little more explicit, I think, about what we want. So let me give them a try at my own version, and then we can have a discussion about it.
All right, well, I'll ask for your motion then right now.
Yeah, if that's okay.
Our motion, yeah.
Okay, so I move to recommend approval of the conceptual site plan and conceptual landscape plan for the proposed 18-unit residential subdivision located on the east corner of the Rancho Vistoso Boulevard and Morning Vista Drive intersection, based on the finding that the proposal would comply with the Rancho Vistoso pad, Oro Valley Zoning Code, revised design principles, and applicable design standards, with the condition that the driveways for lots 14 through 17 be at least 20 feet deep, as are all the other driveways for all the other lots in the development.
So, Chair Gamble, if
yes.
I could maybe just make a comment about that. So through staff and the applicant's effort of trying to work with the challenges of the site, of course, the reason that resulted in that layout was really threefold. The first is that, of course, the trade-off is to minimize as much disturbance to the wash to the north, which, of course, is a priority for the town. After those neighborhood meetings, we heard feedback about wanting to try and get additional buffer from some of those existing homes, and so some of that lot shifting kind of impacted that as well. And then we'd just like also to remind the commission that the current parking configuration does meet the multifamily residential parking requirement. So, you know, it's staff's preference with, again, the draft condition that we recommended that we not put quite as much of a concise cap on it, knowing that we've got those two or three different things we're trying to balance, and can absolutely commit to work with the applicant to try and get as much parking space outside of the sidewalk corridor, if you will, as possible. That's really kind of the nexus for where our condition was drafted from. So I just wanted to make sure the commission was aware of that.
Commissioner Bergsma.
So I understand why you ended up with this kind of configuration. You're trying to save as much fill going to the wash as possible. And that's commendable. But, you know, there's a trade-off here. The question is, where do you want to find the balance? So I think that, well, okay. I mean, I'm willing to go with the condition of approval, I guess, with a little more flexibility in design. But keep in mind that you're creating a situation where you may be creating a situation where you're violating town code in another respect by not providing adequate depth for whatever driveways you have here. So maybe it's not 20 feet, maybe it's 16 feet. You know, the big problem here is you don't have any on-street parking. I live in a neighborhood where we have 16-feet driveways, and a lot of people have big vehicles that overlap onto the sidewalk, and that's a problem. And people come to me, I'm the board president for the HOA, they'll come to me and say, hey, what can be done about this? And I said, well, if you see people doing that, complain to the town. It's a town code. And at least in that situation, they could park on the street. They're not required to park in the driveway. Here, it's not quite the same. So I'm hoping that you'll come up with a solution that doesn't require people who are taking the sidewalk and maybe using a walker or a wheelchair and having to go into the street to get around a car that's hanging over onto the sidewalk. Thank you.
Chair Gamble. Member Bergsma, could we possibly have you withdraw the original motion and try again so that this doesn't become confusing for our clerk?
I will do that. I'm willing to make a revised motion if that's okay.
Yes.
Okay, so let me get the language up here again. I move to recommend approval of the conceptual site plan and conceptual landscape plan for the proposed 18-unit residential subdivision located at on the east corner of the Rancho Vistoso Boulevard and Morning Vista Drive intersection based on the finding that the proposal would comply with the Rancho Vistoso pad, Oro Valley Zoning Code revised design principles and applicable design standards with the condition as suggested by staff.
Do we need to specify that, because this is attached to item A, do we need to read that out? Mr. Vella?
Forgive me for interrupting, Chair. So I just want to be really clear because there's a nuance here in the motion. It meets code right now. Period. So if someone were to park on the sidewalk, that creates a town code issue. But the design in front of you meets code. And so I think the motion needs to reflect that. It's not going to meet code with the condition. The condition is going beyond code requirements. And I forgive me, and I mean, that may be sound a little nitpicky, but I think it's important in terms of the record, especially from a legal perspective. So thank you for your patience in letting me explain that. Thank you.
No problem. Commissioner Bergsma.
Madam Chair, I respectfully disagree with Mr. Vella. I believe that there is a design principle connectivity that is not met by code if we allow this to happen as proposed without the condition. And that is connectivity. Strengthen the usability and connectivity of the pedestrian environment internally and externally by enhancing access to the public street system, blah, blah, blah. So I think that you could argue, at least I would argue, that in fact you don't meet that principle if you keep it under the present design.
Chair Gamble, members of the commission, if we would like, it is on our agenda. We can actually go to executive session and have a discussion on this so we can have it outside of the public's ear, and I can tell you what the law really says.
Mr. Bergsma? Or Commissioner Bergsma, do you feel like that would be beneficial?
I will go with the advice of our attorney if he wishes wants to have a discussion about that.
I don't want to go to executive session. That's your privilege, Mr. Bergsma, members of the commission. If you vote on the motion as it currently stands, I would really want us to go into executive session before you do such a thing.
Again, I'll follow the advice of our attorney.
Just to clarify then, is that a yes or a no? Yes. For the executive session, Mr.
Me?
Andrews? Yes.
That's up to you. You, as the board, have to vote to go into executive session.
Correct. But, okay, so I was just a little lost in the words a little bit of what was being said. Commissioner Bergsma, since this is currently meeting code, and we are just asking them.
Well, again, I don't believe that, it meets code. I'm disagreeing with Mr. Bella.
Okay,
however,
so then let's go into an executive session.
Well, the first thing I would guess is that I don't have a second on this yet. So if I don't have a second, then it's sort of ridiculous for us to proceed into executive session. If I get a second, then I probably should follow our attorney's advice.
Okay, is there a second for that motion?
I'll second.
Okay. So we have actually, I have never done an executive session. Mr. Andrews, how do I call that to order?
Madam Chair, what you do right now is you take a vote of the board or the commission to decide whether or not we go into executive session, and then we retire into a different room and we have a discussion on this topic.
Okay. So I would like to take a vote. Is it roll call or?
Motion, second, and vote, just like anything else.
Okay. Do I have a motion to go into executive session?
I make a motion that we move into executive.
Second?
I'll second.
All those in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. I don't know if you'll be able to come with us.
At this point, so I can help the board out a little bit, it'll be myself, Mr. Vella, and not Mr. Vella, and the other planners in the room, and our clerk will go into executive session, and we'll be back as soon as we're finished.
Okay, thank you. Just wanted to make sure we're all here. All right, we would like to resume the regular session agenda. Ms. Ancona, will you please do another roll call vote for us?
Commissioner Bergsma?
Here. Oh, excuse me, here.
Vice Chair Harrington?
Here.
Commissioner Nichols?
Present by Zoom.
Commissioner Posey?
Here.
Commissioner Sturman?
Here.
And Chair Gamble?
Here. All right. So we are all back. Thank you for your patience. I'm going to turn the time over to Commissioner Bergsma to withdraw his motion, and then Commissioner or Vice Chair Harrington to withdraw his second. Sturman to withdraw the second.
So, Madam Chair, I would like to withdraw my motion.
I accept.
And do we vote on that?
We didn't get to the point of necessary vote. Now that it's been withdrawn, a new motion can be made, Madam Chair.
Wonderful. All right. So, at this time, I would like to ask for a new motion. Commissioner Bergsma.
So, Chair Gamble, I'd like to make a new motion. And that is, I move to recommend approval of the conceptual site plan and conceptual landscape plan for the proposed 18-unit residential subdivision located on the east corner of the Rancho Vistoso Boulevard and Morning Vista Drive intersection, based on the finding that the proposal complies with the Rancho Vistoso PAD, Oral Valley Zoning Code Revised, design principles and applicable design standards, with the condition agreed to by the applicant that driveways for lots 14 through 17 are to be widened and or the distance to the rear property line shall be reduced to the minimum setback to better accommodate a standard vehicle.
All right, could I get a second?
I'll second.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
There are no opposed. All right, so we've got item B now that we're moving on to. So could I get a motion for that? Commissioner Bergsma?
I move to approve the conceptual model home architecture plan for the proposed 18-unit residential subdivision located on the east corner of the Rancho Vistoso Boulevard and Morning Vista Drive intersection, based on the finding that the proposal complies with the design principles and design standards of the Oro Valley Zoning Code Revised.
Can I get a second?
I'll second that motion.
All right, thank you, Vice Chair Harrington. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And there are no opposed. All right, moving on, Ms. Ancona, could you please read out our agenda item number 3?
Discussion regarding proposed code amendments to align and clarify standards in the multifamily zoning districts, Chapter 23, Provisions for Recreation Area, Chapter 26, Definitions, Chapter 31, and other related items.
All right, thank you. I'd like to turn the time over to Ms. Malini Sims for the staff presentation.
Thank you, Chair Gamble. Good evening. My name is Malini Sims. I'm a principal planner with the Town of Oro Valley. I'm going to maybe give them one moment. So our purpose is with this item is to update the commission on a proposed code amendment that was initiated back in March regarding application of multifamily standards, for example, recreation standards. This item is for discussion and feedback only, and it will be brought back to the commission for recommendation at a later date. The proposed code amendment represents a first step in addressing goals and policies in the general plan related to housing. Later this year, staff anticipates presenting revised design standards to bolster requirements for attached housing products, and working on a housing study, which will be foundational to setting policies related to housing in the next general plan. Again, this code amendment was initiated by the commission as recommended by staff. Staff's recommendation was in response to receiving four applications for housing developments with a mix of detached and attached units. Upon review of these developments, it was apparent there were gaps and inconsistencies in applying existing code standards to various housing types. Specifically, the missing middle housing, which is a term that's used nationally to describe housing types that are similar in scale and form to single-family homes, yet act as a transition between your typical subdivision and compact higher-density developments. The missing middle homes range from attached products, such as duplexes and townhomes, to multi-level buildings with mixed uses or your standard apartment. The proposed code amendment aims to clarify and align existing zoning standards to an array of housing types, including those in the missing middle housing. A couple key points to keep in mind as I go through this presentation is that the goal of the code is to ensure the existing standards are being applied accurately to each housing type. The code amendment is not changing existing parking or design standards, and the minor changes to the recreation standards and the R6 setbacks are for consistency and clarification to ensure the intent of the code is being met. So for background, the town has several single-family and four multifamily zoning districts. As shown on your screen, the town's multifamily districts allow a range of housing products, including the middle housing types. Specifically, the R4 townhome and R4R resort district support the attached housing products. This ranges from duplexes, townhomes, and triplexes. Whereas the R6 or the RS zoning districts allow for higher densities such as apartments, as well as neighborhood scale non-residential uses such as offices. Again, the purpose of the code amendment is to clarify and align the existing zoning standards with the housing types already permitted within the code. So to achieve this purpose, the proposed code amendment includes three different items. First, it defines the different housing types, and using these definitions, it then aligns the existing recreation, parking, and design standards with the appropriate housing type. Lastly, it revises the R6 setbacks for consistency with other Oro Valley multifamily zoning districts, as discussed during the initiation. So I'm going to do this presentation a little bit different tonight because there's a lot of information in each different section. So bear with me, but I will be taking pauses throughout the presentation just to check in and get your feedback after each section. So to get us started, again, first, the code defines housing, the current code defines housing by your industry terms. Common terms used in the code and industry are shown on the left-hand side of your screen. These terms change over time and are used differently by various jurisdictions. A great example is the term casita. Last year, this term was used to describe several projects in Oro Valley. Another great example is the term patio home, which has become antiquated and is not used as often nor shows up in most other zoning codes. Another issue with the existing terms is they tend to overlap. Duplexes, patio homes, and townhomes are all products that are attached by a wall. Our current definition for apartments is a building designed for three or more families. So, if a developer proposes a row of three homes attached horizontally, is that a townhome or is that an apartment? Those are some of the overlap that we want to address with this proposed code amendment. And to do so, we highlight the differences between each building form. By doing so, it categorizes the common industry terms into three different categories: detached, attached, and multi-level. So to break this down a little bit further, the term detached refers to a building designed for one family that is a freestanding unit. This includes existing terms such as custom or model homes, casita, cottages, and more. This represents one end of the housing scale. Next, attached units represent the bulk of the middle housing types. This includes your plexes, so duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes, again, casitas and cottages, townhomes, and more. When looking at these housing products, the main characteristics that are shared by all of them is that they are attached either side to side or front to back. These housing types are designed for two or more families. Then lastly are your multi-level units. This represents the other end of the housing scale and includes your typical apartment or condominium, or any housing product that is stacked with one unit on top of another. This also includes when a unit is stacked on top of a non-residential use, so your live-work type of housing product. And again, the RS and the R6 district both allow office uses. So to summarize, the first part of the code amendment that we are proposing is to categorize those existing code and industry terms into three main housing types: detached, attached, and multi-level. I do want to point out that although attached and multi-level are both for two or more families, the main difference is that attached, we're looking at being on a horizontal plane. So again, front to back or side to side. And multi-level, you're going vertical. And now is where I want to stop talking and ask if you have any questions about the housing types I just described.
All right, Commissioner Bergsma.
Thank you, Chair Gamble. So I wrote down one of the statements you made, which is we're highlighting the differences between each building form. Is this a step towards form-based zoning, or what's called form-based zoning for residential development?
Sure. Chair Gamble, Commissioner Bergsma, we did look into all types of zoning codes to develop this approach. And I will say it's unique to both form-based and other zoning codes. But really looking at the building characteristics or the characteristics of what is on site is definitely a theme of form-based code, if you will.
Thank you. I think you're headed in the right direction. You're certainly simplifying things by doing it this way.
Thank you.
Commissioner Posey.
Thank you, Chair Gamble. You know, this is kind of confusing to me because, you know, old school and all the words, it's kind of different play on words. But since it's confusing to me and I'm going through all this and I'm thinking, how confusing will it be to the public?
Sure.
You know what I think.
Sure. Chair Gamble, Commissioner Posey. No. We definitely understand, and there's a lot going on. I do want to say that I think the proposed code amendment will simplify things a bit more. Again, right now, with the existing terms, there's a lot of overlap, and the terms are used interchangeably by different developers, where with our proposed terms, I think there's a little bit more clarification by not using, for example, patio home versus townhome. That, in your head, you're probably thinking about the same thing, right? But if I say attached versus detached, you can maybe visualize something a little bit different. So we're trying to clarify.
I'll be trying to. An example would be like an apartment. It's got several names here: multifamily, stack duplex, and then four something. I don't know what it was, but I'll get used to it. I'm sure. I just was, you know, concerned about the public, maybe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yeah.
Ammo.
Commissioner Sturman.
Thank you. I welcome this, and the reason for it is me being involved now with more HOA functions. I'm finding out that when you start voting, we have to clarify, are we dealing with single-family residents, multi-family other than single-family, and also multi-level? Because an HOA board is usually represented by a certain body of residents, and when you have a multi complex of housing, you have to make sure that you identify it. So to have this type of clarity is much better, because that's exactly what's happening within the pad of Rancho Vistoso. So I really, really like this proposed type of form, because it helps our voting process and then have everybody represented within the pad. Thank you.
Chair, I have a comment.
Yep.
This is Joe Nichols. I would like to commend the staff on the work they've done so far. I think this is going in the right direction. I'm anxious to see your final product. I just wanted to lend my support. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, and then Commissioner Bergsma.
Thank you. Just to follow up, so I know you had very long showing of code amendments as an attachment to the staff report, and I sort of skimmed over that. There's a lot of stuff in there that's not all that relevant. But I didn't look at the – I don't know if you had definitions of these terms in there. Did you have definitions of the terms we're talking about here and there?
Chair Gamble, Commissioner Bergsma, yes. So that would be in Chapter 31. We removed definitions for patio homes, townhomes, apartments, and replaced them with these definitions. I do want to, for Commissioner Posey, for the public's help as well, assistance, we made sure in the definitions in the code, for instance, it will say this term includes apartments, this term includes townhomes and patio homes, because we understand that those are the terms that most people are aware about. So we did include those in the definitions.
And so basically, having not read them, basically the definitions will say a detached unit is one that's not connected either horizontally or vertically. An attached is connected horizontally but not vertically, and then what's the other? Multi-level is basically connected maybe both ways. So is that something like that will be in the definition?
Sure. Chair Gamble, Commissioner Bergsma. Yeah, and actually what's shown in the orange side of the table for attached units, exactly as you said, it's units that are attached side by side or front to back through structural elements. So we also wanted to be clear of what means attached, as well as multi-level. It's very clear that they're stacked on top of each other or stacked on non-residential uses.
Chair Gamble.
Yep.
When you say multi-level dwelling units, we have a situation where we call a casitas, and they're two-story. So wouldn't that be considered multi-level? Because I notice in your common industry terms, you have the casita and cottage, and that's equivalent to a single family. Am I interpreting that correctly?
Chair Gamble, Commissioner Sturman, so if it was a two-story townhouse or casita, that would be considered attached because it's the same family within those two stories. However, if it's two separate units, so you have one family on the bottom and one family on the top, then that's a multi-level.
Yes, because that's exactly what we have. We have two separate entities, and so that's what I wanted to clarify, and also that possibly that you ought to note the casitas. There is a possibility to have a casita with two single residents stacked.
So if it was two different families stacked on top of each other, that yes. would be multi-level. If it's the same family, though, in a two-story building, like let's say the living room's on the bottom and the bedrooms are on top, that would be your attached dwelling unit.
Okay, thanks.
So I'm going to continue on. So looking at those housing types we just discussed and defined, staff identified two ways in which they develop. So first is with each unit on an individual lot, which is your typical subdivision design. Subdivisions with detached homes are pretty common in Oro Valley, but as you just saw, there are subdivisions with a mix of detached and attached. There's even subdivisions with all attached units if you're familiar with the Ridgeview development on the end of Moore and Rancho Vistoso. The second type of residential development includes residential complexes, where each unit is on a common parcel rather than an individual lot. Again, the housing types can range from a mix of detached and attached units, which are a growing trend in the region, a complex with only attached units, which is similar to the project being constructed on Linda Vista and Oracle, or a typical multi-level complex like your standard apartments. The middle housing, especially subdivisions or complexes with a mix of detached and attached units, are again what spurred this code amendment. Application of recreation standards, parking standards, and design standards are not clear and sometimes inconsistent in the existing code. So I'll explain that a little bit further. So the existing recreation standards are based on the zoning district, not on the housing type. This is an issue because the same housing development will illogically have different rec standards depending on which zone they are developing in. This approach is inconsistent with our single family standards, which require the same amount of recreation area per dwelling unit regardless of what zoning district you are in. So an example of what this results in is shown with your first table on the screen. A housing development with attached products could require 10% of the gross land area as rec area, or it could require 36% of the gross land area as rec space. And again, that just depends on the zoning district, not due to the housing type. Furthermore, what this creates is a one-size-fits-all for all housing types within the same zoning district. So to further explain this, looking at the R6 zoning district, it currently requires 50% of 35% of the gross land area to be a rec space. So I don't have to repeat that a lot. It just requires basically a single common rec area, which is suitable if you have a multi-level development. It also requires indoor facilities as well as a playground if there's 20 or more units. Well, again, this is suitable for your high-density multi-level apartment type development. However, R6 also allows detached homes. It also allows a mix of detached and attached products. So indoor facilities are as suitable when it comes to your typical subdivision design. Also, that one-size-fits-all, again, kind of raises an issue when you have multiple housing types within the same district. So the proposed code amendment clarifies and aligns the existing rec standards. It applies the existing standards based on the housing types. So specifically what's shown in the bottom table is that residential subdivisions, which provide front, rear, and side yards, because again, each unit's on an individual lot, will utilize the existing subdivision requirement, which is 1 acre per 85 units. Residential complexes, which typically offer no front yards and very small, rarer side yards, are split into two subgroups. So complexes with a mix of detached and attached units, or all attached units, will utilize what is the current townhome rec requirement, which is 10% of the gross land area. And then the multi-level, your higher density products, will still utilize that same R6 requirement now, which again is suited for your compact development. Currently, this rec space can be divided amongst several different places within a subdivision or a complex, unless you're in an R6 zone. And the intent of the code is to make sure there is a substantial and meaningful rec space with amenities. So the proposed code amendment limits the distribution of this rec space to two areas, through administrative approval, and further distribution will require Planning and Zoning Commission approval, and that's when elements such as topography, proximity to the users, so if it's a spread out development, or the variety of amenities proposed warrants the need for further distribution. And then lastly, the proposed code amendment aligns the private outdoor space adjoining each unit, again, to make sure it's aligned with the appropriate housing type and not having, you know, what was best suitable for a multi-level be applicable to a detached housing unit. So again, the rec area is a little bit more information, so I want to take a moment and pause and just see if you guys, if you had any questions.
Mayor Bergsma?
So you're sort of staying with the existing standards to a certain extent, but you're also trying to simplify things and get away from zoning-related or zoning district-related stuff. And again, tie it to the type of units. How long have those standards been in effect? I mean, when? What was the process? Do we know how long they've been there? Like 50% of 35%? You know, it's sort of a weird number. When was that developed, and how was it developed?
Sure. Chair Gamble, Commissioner Bergsma, these standards have been in place for quite a while. I don't have an exact time off the top of my head, but I do know they've been in place for a while now. So we are just trying to align the existing standards rather than change them at this time.
I know you don't want to go too far, because once you get into the details, then you've got to bring in the park and recreation folks, and God knows what they're going to think. But it'd be nice to maybe give a little more thought to the numbers here.
Sure. Thank you. Chair Gamble, Commissioner Bergsma, yes, there is as part of the Town Council Strategic Leadership Plan, there is looking at the rec area code is one of the objectives, so there is a separate recreation code taking a deeper dive into those numbers.
That might be helpful. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So next, to finish off the recreation requirements, this one I think is a little less number intensive, but we looked at the existing amenities. So currently right now in single family subdivisions, your typical subdivision, we do have a requirement that a passive and active amenity must be required for every half acre, excuse me. And what I mean by passive and active is passive amenities are your seating areas, ramadas, shade structures, where active amenities are more so your courts, playgrounds, etc. And what we see here is that with the multifamily standards, although it is intended that those same amenities were used for multifamily developments, it's not as clear in the code or not as direct in the code for that to be used. And again, when you look at the R6, that higher density amenity requirement requires indoor rec if there's 50 units or more, as well as a tot lot if there are 20 or more units, which again isn't applicable to detached subdivisions, which are also permitted in R6. So the proposed code amendment applies the same recreation amenity standard to all housing developments. So every housing development will require that one passive and one active amenity per every half acre. In addition to that, multi-level developments, so your compact apartments, will still require the indoor facilities if there's 50 or more units, and a playground if there's 20 or more two-bedroom units. So the reason we added the two-bedroom or the unit size to that standard is because the intent of that code requirement was to make sure if there were kids present in the apartment complex, there would be a playground. And as you may recall with the apartment study, most apartments tend to have smaller family sizes. And so when we looked at that, we thought, well, if you had two or more bedrooms, it's more of an accurate way of gauging if there's children present. So next, as shown on the screen, is the application of existing parking standards. which, as you can see, are clear for detached, attached, and multi-level housing products. It is a little less clear when there's a mix of detached and attached products as to which standards apply. Additionally, attached products on individual lots are currently subject to parking requirements that are more applicable to a shared parking scenario. The requirement listed on the screen is difficult to meet through garages and driveways. So similar to the recreation standards, the proposed code amendment treats all residential subdivisions, which again typically have a garage with driveways, the same. The existing subdivision parking standard will apply to all developments where each unit is on an individual lot, and that's 4 spaces per unit. For residential complexes, which shown in green, again, they typically have shared parking lots. And so the existing multifamily parking requirements will continue to apply. And then lastly is the application of the design standards, which provides guidance for site, building, facade, and landscape design. Currently, there is overlap and confusion as to which standards apply to attached or when you have that mix of attached and detached products. These housing products are included in the applicability section of both our single-family model home design standards and our multifamily standards. However, when looking at the standards and in applying those, it is clear that through the graphics and the requirements that the multifamily standards were intended for multi-level or compact apartment complexes. Therefore, the proposed code amendment allows all housing products to use the model home standards except for the multi-level housing products, which will continue to use the multifamily standards. Again, there are no changes at this time recommended for the parking or the design standards. However, staff does anticipate bolstering the design standards for that missing middle, that attached housing products, as we revise the design standards for presentation later this fall. So to summarize the second part of the code amendment, alignment and clarification in applying the existing zoning standards is proposed to ensure accurate application to various housing types. Again, there were minor changes made to the REC standards to get meaningful and usable open space, but allow flexibility when warranted, and to better gauge user needs. However, no changes again are made to the parking or design standards at this time. So the last part of the code amendment was discussed during initiation, which is to clarify the R6 setbacks and revise them for consistency with other Oro Valley multifamily zoning districts. As shown on the screen, the current perimeter setbacks are not based on adjacent uses like other multifamily districts. Additionally, the R6 district is the only district that bases internal setbacks or distances between buildings on the site on height. Other districts with similar or even taller heights require the same distance between buildings. So the proposed code amendment takes the existing R6 setbacks and applies them to the adjacent uses that are most applicable. This is a useful method to ensure the development is located further away from roads and lower density uses, yet may be closer to analogous or higher intensity uses. As you can see on the image, that in practice, for a single-story structure, the current front setback is 30 feet, which is typically along a roadway. So the proposed code amendment requires 30 feet from all roadways. The existing 20-foot side setback is maintained from all lower density single family residential districts. And the main difference between the existing and proposed is the allowance for a single story structure to be 10 feet instead of 20 feet away from a non-residential or analogous use. This 10 feet is derived from what is used in an R4 district, which again has a similar height and density. And for consistency with the other multifamily zoning districts, the proposed code amendment revises the internal setbacks. Again, that's the setbacks between buildings within the site. It revises it to 10 feet, and regardless of height, which is, again, similar to the other multifamily districts. So, as always, the proposed code amendment was reviewed for compliance with the general plan. By clarifying and aligning the existing zoning standards to address an array of housing types, the proposed code amendment complies with several goals and policies related to supporting diverse housing types for current and future residents. The code amendment does represent a first step to addressing the goals and policies in the general plan, and the upcoming revision to the design standards, which is anticipated to bolster standard architecture design for attached products, and the housing study, which will be foundational for housing policies in the next general plan, are anticipated to occur later this year. The purpose of this proposed code amendment is to ensure accurate application of existing standards and to clarify those standards for an array of housing types. Again, there are no changes to the parking or design standards, and the minor changes to the recreation and R6 setback standards are for consistency and clarification. This concludes my presentation, and I appreciate your feedback I've received so far, but I'm happy to hear more questions or feedback from you. Thank you.
Chair Gamble, could you go back to the slide where you talked? Yeah. So technically what you're doing is you are 30 feet away from a road. So you took 10 feet from the back, you know, it used to be 20 and now it's 10. Is there a reason for that? Is there something that's happened over time that it proves that we should have that type of dimensions?
Sure. Chair Gamble, Commissioner Sturman. So right now the setbacks are 30 feet from road and then 20 feet from every other side. And the reason for changing that to 10 feet is it is more similar, and let me go back one slide, to what the R4 allows, which is also allows 25-foot tall attached products as well. So it's allowing a R6 development to be closer to uses that are of equal or more intensity. So allowing it to be, for instance, El Corridor where Dutch Brothers is. So there's apartments behind that development, allowing those apartments to be further away from the homes behind them, but closer to the commercial that's right in front of them is the purpose of that.
Did we have other questions? Oh, Commissioner Posey.
Thank you, Chair Gamble. I was just thinking about the distance between, like, the two-story changes on the R6. I just was wondering what the reason was in the beginning. I was thinking of the safety reasons, maybe fire trucks or something like that. Could you just explain it to me? Why we want to go closer now, or that it might? I don't want it to be a safety hazard. Sure. For anybody.
Chair Gamble, Commissioner Posey, great question. So the 10 feet between the buildings is derived from what's already allowed in other multifamily districts that even allow taller heights. So right now, if you have two stories next to each other, they need to be 20 feet apart. However, you could have that same two-story product in all the other districts, and they only have to be 10 or 5 feet apart. And with regards to the safety, the 10 feet still allows enough room for pedestrian connectivity and fire to move through the complex as well.
Chair Gamble.
Thank you. Commissioner Sturman.
Thank you. Is there any thought, you know, that's given, you know, to get them closer? I mean, wouldn't that be kind of a fire issue? Where the chances of the residents, of the other residents catching fire, so the farther away from each other, it would be more of a safety issue?
Sure. Chair Gamble, Commissioner Sturman, with regard to fire, there are fire codes through the building. side that require certain measures to make sure that there's protections between units and between buildings. And again, what we looked at was really that in Rancho Vistoso, for instance, you could have a three-story building and only be 5 feet apart. So in comparison, the 10 feet for a two-story seemed similar to the other districts.
And Chair Gamble, could I just add a note to that, too? So because these multi-level developments will be, you know, rentals most of the time, fire code does require them to all have sprinklers. So that is a distinct difference compared to some of the other housing types. So that's part of the rationale, too, for why that separation is covered by other requirements, too.
And Chair Gamble, just to add to that, when you have residences or dwellings that share walls, those walls have to have a certain rating of fire protection from our inspectors. So fire is dealt with through a number of different ways based on the type of product that's actually installed. There are actually fire breaks within most of our homes in the attic between our garage and our home that we never knew were there, but they're there.
That's good information. Thank you.
Okay, well, I had one question. So I was wanting a little bit of clarification. It had to do with the internal setbacks. Mm-hmm. I don't know what page this was on in our packet. 5 of 7. Mm-hmm. But I have a little bit of concern with buildings that are two or more stories. I guess a little bit concerned with like the R6, and I don't know if the RS is the same, where, you know, we have buildings that are more than two stories, and currently the existing setbacks between internal buildings are 20 feet, correct?
So, great. Yes. So currently the distance between two-story buildings is 20 feet, yes.
Okay, and so the proposed change is to have that be 10 feet?
Correct.
Okay, I don't really agree with that. That's not, sure. I think that just creates a lot of density, and I think one of the things we do love in Oro Valley is more of that open space and that open feel. And I think with a product like this, then you're just like staring right into your neighbor's windows, like especially at 10 feet. And I live in Rancho Vistoso where I have 5 feet and 5 feet, and I always have to keep my office window closed because my neighbor's office window is right there and I hate it. It's just really uncomfortable. One time I like opened the window and they were in there and I was like, oh my gosh. And so I do not love just that 10 feet. I would love for that to be to, you know, maintain 20 feet, especially if we're going higher than two stories.
So, Chair Gamble, the max height would be the two stories, the 25 feet two story.
Yeah. All right, and then then we get into the multifamily. Multi-level.
So, Chair Gamble,
I'm so sorry.
No, it's a lot. Let me try to explain. So, in R6, the maximum height for any type of housing product is two story. So in an R6 right now, you can only have a two-story multi-level apartment building. That's as high as you can go. And so the 10-feet distance between that is based on that. In an R4 district, you can have a two-story building and only need 10 feet between them. So we're trying to pair the two,
R4, is that just a single family living in that building?
Correct.
And then this is two families.
Correct. It could be. Yeah.
Okay. So then I still agree with my original comment about wanting to have the 20 feet.
Sure. I actually agree as well. It just to go from 20 to 10, I mean, cutting it in half, and seems extreme to me.
Sure. Thank you. Any other comments? Commissioner Bergsma?
Well, just to follow up on that a little bit. So what I hear you saying basically is that if you have the same kind of development in different zones, you should have the same setback standards for that development, no matter which zone you're in.
So, yes and no. So what we're trying to do is looking at the built characteristics. So a two-story building, it could have two different families in it or one family. Right now, we're trying to pair that together. We'd only be 10 feet apart from each other. And again, it's because in other zoning districts that are multifamily, like Rancho Vistosa, which does allow you to go up to 3 feet or three stories, 3 feet would be really small, three stories, you have a 5 foot separation. So we are trying to make them more similar, where right now R6 requires more than others.
So just to follow that up with the Rancho Vistosa, three stories, so is that a multi-level apartment?
It could be, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we're good.
Thank you.
All right, thank you so much, Ms. Sims. I will turn the time over to Mr. Spaeth for our planning update.
Yes, thank you, Chair, members of the Commission. Tonight's planning update, so for next meeting on June 7th, we currently have two items. Well, the first is a conceptual architecture for San Dorado Pad E, which if you're San Dorado's on the south side of Oracle, where Chipotle and Panera Bread and CVS are. If you're not familiar with that, we have a new standalone building that was already part of an approved master development plan. So now they're bringing the architecture forward now that the market's there to support it. And then we do have the public hearing for the R6 code amendment that Ms. Sims just presented to you. And another item of note is a study session is going to be held with town council on May 18th regarding changes to the plan for the Oro Valley Marketplace. So obviously that's a big project. Wanted to make sure you guys were aware of that. So thank you, Chair. That concludes my presentation.
All right. Thank you so much. Ms. Ancona, would you mind sending out a reminder to the commission about that meeting on the, was it May 18th? Thank you. And with that, can I get a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second. All right. We'll see you later.